Blog Talk Radio.
So I'm gon' drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You a fake, so I'm gon' drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left.
Son of a bitch. The amount of news I have for you today is just not even fair. Yesterday was a gigantic day. In many, many ways, tremendous, believe me. So we got the Betsy DeVos situation. I'm going to lead with that story because it represents the downfall of the United States of America. I'm laughing, but it's not funny. It's actually kind of true. Oh, it's so sad. So we got the Betsy DeVos situation we're going to talk about. We have Elizabeth Warren. I don't know if you saw what happened with her yesterday, but it was bad. She was silenced on the floor of the Senate, and she was silenced for no good reason. So I'm waiting for all the right-wing faux free speech warriors to come out now and, you know, defend her and say, oh, this is wrong, and how dare you silence debate like this. We're going to talk about that. That'll probably be second. Then we got Bernie Sanders versus Ted Cruz. We'll discuss that a little bit. They did an Obamacare debate. And much, much more, man. Forget about it. You came to the right place today if you want to have basically endless political talk and news. All right, so let's go ahead and get started here. And we're going to do that with Betsy DeVos, like I said. Okay, here we go. Betsy DeVos was approved by the Senate to be the next education secretary. Now, that is really, really, really bad news. Thankfully, every Democrat opposed her. I think this is the first one where all the Democrats came together and said, yeah, you went a little bit too far here. So remember, there are Democrats who even voted for Pompeo. Pompeo is now the CIA head, and he said Edward Snowden should be executed. He defended torturers as patriots. ExxonMobil, three Democrats voted for Rex Tillerson, the CEO of ExxonMobil, to be the next Secretary of State, even though President Trump in the campaign went everywhere saying we should, quote, take the oil from the Middle East. So even the Democratic sellouts, the corporate Democrats, who you and I despise, even they said on DeVos, okay, this is way too far. So what happened is Vice President Mike Pence had to break a tie. It was 50-50. Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, they're Republicans. They're viewed as moderate Republicans. They actually voted against her. So, but save them, every other Republican voted for her. So even Republicans that like it to every now and then buck orthodoxy, like Rand Paul, for example, on some issues, and even John McCain on other issues, even they were like, okay, we're going to end up voting for DeVos. Now, you're going to see why in just a second here, but let's keep in mind who Betsy DeVos is and why this is such a sad day. So Betsy DeVos is a billionaire. She is a Christian fundamentalist. She is a rabid school privatizer. In fact, she donated to private schools all over the place. She never went to public school. Nobody in her family ever went to public school. She doesn't believe in public school. And now she's the head of public schools. She also is the goofy-ass person who mentioned on the issue of guns, yeah, maybe we should have guns in school to protect the students from grizzly bears. Huh? She really said that in the hearing. If you haven't seen it, please go check it out. It's basically like Sarah Palin is now the head of education in the United States of America. So she has no education degree, no teaching experience. She never attended a public school or a state university, never put her own children in it. Again, Christian fundamentalist, which probably is the most concerning thing to me. But not only is she a billionaire, she's also an oligarch. So look at the real reason why she was confirmed in the end. We've shown this before, but this is the chart of the amount of money that Betsy DeVos gave to all these different Republicans. So I mentioned John McCain and how John McCain ended up voting for her. Well, now you see why. John McCain got $50,600 from her. Is Rand Paul on this list as well? Let's take a look-see here. I see Ron Johnson and R, Richard Burr, Lisa Murkowski, Roy Blunt. I actually don't see Rand Paul on this. So Rand Paul came cheap. am I missing? Is Marco Rubio, Tom Tillis, Pat Toomey? That's even more sad. Like, dude, she didn't give you anything and you voted for her? What the fuck is wrong with you? So apparently she didn't give to Rand Paul, but this is the list of people who got money. These are the senators who got money from Betsy DeVos. You have Jim Inhofe, $1,000, Orrin Hatch, $2,000, Tom Cotton, $2,600, John Thune, $17,500, Chuck Grassley, $21,600, Dan Sullivan, $23,400, along with David Perdue, same amount, Roy Blunt, $33,100, Mitch McConnell, $36,400, Lisa Murkowski, who actually in the end voted against her, $43,200, good on her for doing that, Richard Burr, $43,200, Mike Rounds and Steve Daines, $46,800. Todd Young and Ron Johnson, $48,600. Tim Scott, $49,200. Cory Gardner, $49,800. John McCain, $50,600. Rob Portman, $51,000. Pat Toomey, $60,000. Tom Tillis, $70,200, along with Bill Cassidy. And Marco Rubio, $98,300 she got from DeVos. So she bought this position. This is a fucking scandal. Not only does she have zero experience and disqualifying beliefs because she's a religious fundamentalist who doesn't even believe in public schools, she also just flat out bought the position. I don't know why this isn't the biggest scandal and the biggest story in the country right now. This is ridiculous. I mean, this is something where, you know, one of the thoughts I had was, oh my God, what are other countries thinking of us right now looking at us? We just put a ridiculous human being to lead the public schools and it's on record that she bribed all the senators. But the crazy thing is, this is all legal. How the fuck is this legal? I mean, could you imagine if it was the exact same set of facts, but it was in Russia? We'd all be like, oh, ha, ha, look at this fucking authoritarian, crazy oligarchy. Look at what they got going on over there. That's ridiculous. In fact, I remember they would talk about how, you know, what was the number? Like over 95% of the time, the people in power in Russia would stay in power, and they would use that like, ha-ha, see, it's just not even a free country. Well, guess what? Here in the United States, over 95% of the time, the people who raise the most money end up getting elected. So that's the same kind of thing. Here we've legalized the bribery under the guise of campaign contributions and under the guise of, it's just free speech. Free speech? What the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, if you give money to somebody, and a politician, and then they do favors for you, that's just free speech. No, that's bribery, and that's corruption 101. What are you talking about, free speech? And think about that logic. If that logic holds true, which is money is speech, why can't you legally go buy crystal meth right now? After all, you're not really buying it. All you're doing is expressing with speech to another person who's a drug dealer, hey, I really like crystal meth. Here is my speech that I'm going to give you. Why can't you go to a prostitute? I'm just expressing with speech how much I love blowjobs. I don't know what the problem is here. This is speech, right? Money speech. Well, I'm expressing to this fine young lady I just found on the corner that I like blowjobs. The logic breaks down immediately, but it is the case right now. And by the way, it's also true that so we have campaign contributions that are legalized bribery, but there are instances where they say, oh, you've gone too far, and that's actual bribery. So, you know, if there's a quid pro quo, so in other words, if you give the person the money and say, I am going to give you this money, and you need to give me X, Y, and Z, then they go, oh, that's illegal. You're, it's got to be, you got to you know, dance around it. You got to be sly in how you say you want the thing that you want. You can't just come out and say it, because then that'd be illegal. So you got to, it's got to be implied. Like, oh, okay, ExxonMobil gives this person money. Now they know they get that. ExxonMobil gets the corporate welfare check. They get the subsidy. But think about it. If that logic holds true, that money equals speech, then actually, why is any bribery illegal? Because the same logic would hold then. If money equals speech, then whether it's a campaign contribution and you dance around the quid pro quo, or whether you outright do a quid pro quo, well, then that's still free speech, because it's just money that's expressing something. So it makes no sense in so many ways, but this is what is legal in the United States of America, and I don't think any one of these people thought twice about it. To them, it was just like, duh. Like, what do you mean? Okay, so she's not smart. She doesn't believe in public schools. She's a Christian fundamentalist who paid lip service to intelligent design. She's going to decimate our public schools, and she bought this position. I don't care. The fuck do I care? So what? I'm handicapping generations of students because we're having an idiot that, you know, be involved with leading this and crafting the curriculum and whatnot. So what? So what? I don't care, because guess what? She gave me money. So it's I scratch your back, you scratch mine. I want to get reelected. When I get reelected, I got to get a check that, you know, that's a lot of money, because if I raise more money, I'm more likely to win. So yeah, I'll do whatever the fuck you want. This is all out in the open, and it's, to them, it's a duh, and that's what drives me fucking crazy. To them, it's a duh. The idea of, yeah, I voted for her because she gave me shitloads of money. To them, that's like, I don't see what the problem is. They're so used to it. They're bathing in the corruption. It's around them 24/7. So, you know, if you talk to a fish, it's a funny sentence to say. Hey, how's the water? What are you talking about, water? What do you mean water? What are you talking about? Water. What does that mean? Because they're in water all the time. So to them, it's like, you know, this is a thing. There's something other than this. There's something different. That's the same thing. I took money and voted for her. What the fuck's the problem? I don't see a problem. I don't know. What do you mean? Well, it is a problem. It is a problem, because the rest of the country, regular people look at that and they go, oh, my God, you loathsome, dirty, backroom deal-making, slimy motherfuckers. Like, this is how you run the country, and then you have the nerve to lecture people about democracy and human rights and freedom? Off. So today is a horrible day for the country. I had the thought yesterday, man, when I saw that Betsy DeVos got through, I thought, we're done. I slipped into ultimate pessimism, because how can we? She is the most unqualified person ever and the last person who should have this position. And I'm not just saying that. Her entire record. You saw the fucking hearing with her. She doesn't know anything. She's really not smart. And now she's going to be the head of education? No experience, never been to a public school, nobody in her family ever went to a public school, doesn't believe in public schools, and she's a fucking religious lunatic. Oh. I briefly slipped into ultimate pessimism, but then I bounced right back and said, now we got to fight harder. We got to fight harder. We got to take over the Democratic Party, and after we take over the Democratic Party, have a wave of progressives and liberals get the majority and eventually get the presidency, because they're going to do a lot of damage. You know, the problem with the corporate Democrats is that when they're in power, if we're lucky, they inch us in the right direction 3%, or most of the time they probably just keep us coasting the same or even move us in the wrong direction sometimes. But the Republicans, when they get power, they just face the car in the wrong direction and put the pedal to the metal. So now it's going to be hard work to even get back to where we were before, and that's not acceptable. I mean, with all the major problems we face, like climate change, for example, you need bold, intelligent government that can really solve these problems and be serious. But we don't even have a government that acknowledges the problems exist right now. They are the problem. So it's just sad. We have a lunatic who bought the position of leading education. Welcome to the United States of America. Okay. Next. Boom, boom. So the Democrats held the floor in opposition to Jeff Sessions last night. Trump, of course, picked Sessions to become Attorney General. Elizabeth Warren was giving her speech against him, and then this happened.
In 2013, Senator Sessions voted against reauthorizing the Violence Against Women Act, a bill that expanded the protections and services provided to victims of sexual assault and domestic violence. There's a piece from the Bedford Minuteman that really tells the story of how sexual violence impacts Massachusetts. And this is what it said. They are mothers, daughters, sisters, fathers, sons, and brothers.
Mr. President.
They are
majority leader. Mr. President.
The majority leader.
The senator is impugning the motives and conduct of our colleague from Alabama, as warned by the chair. Senator Warren, quote, said Senator Sessions has used the awesome power of his office to chill the free exercise of the vote by black citizens. I call the senator to order under the provisions of Rule 19.
Mr. President.
The senator from Massachusetts.
Mr. President, I am surprised that the words of Coretta Scott King are not suitable for debate in the United States Senate. I ask leave of the Senate to continue my remarks.
Is there objection?
Object.
I appeal the ruling.
Objection is heard. The senator will take her seat.
Mr. President.
I appeal the ruling of the chair, and I suggest the absence of a quorum.
The clerk will call the roll.
They silenced her. And then 49 bitch Republicans voted to keep her mouth shut. No, this is something I've never seen this before. Somebody tweeted at me last night, you know, I'm fine with it because the Democrats would do the same. They didn't. They didn't. I've never seen this before. She started reading a letter from the widow of the great Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., a letter about Jeff Sessions from Coretta Scott King. This was when, I believe, when Jeff Sessions was up to become a federal judge in the late 1980s. So Coretta Scott King said, no, I know his race record, and his race record is disastrous. So don't do it. Don't approve him. By the way, back then, Republicans said, his race record is disastrous. We're going to have to go ahead and not approve you. He couldn't get a position, a lower federal court position back then because his record was that bad. So all Elizabeth Warren is doing is what, I don't know, fucking everybody does in the Senate. Let me go up there, say my piece, give my argument, tell you my position, tell you how I'm going to vote on this, try to sway people. That's the whole fucking point of the Senate. And Mitch McConnell goes,
oh, how dare you? You have impugned the integrity of the great Jeff Sessions. You have besmirched his name.
Therefore, we're going to have to go ahead and censor you. You know, this is fascinating because it appears like Mitch was triggered, and he needed a safe space from that microaggression. How else am I supposed to interpret this?
You said something I didn't like about you.
So now we have to ban you and censor you and shut you the fuck up. I need everybody out there who considers himself a free speech warrior to speak up. Where's the anger? Where's the outrage? Now, look, I'm consistent on this. I just did the segment the other day. I believe in free speech across the board, to the point where even when it's people I despise, if they want to go speak on a public, a college campus, by all means. I disagree with the protesters when they try to shut up like Ben Shapiro or Milo Yiannopoulos or Steven Crowder or whoever. I don't give a fuck. Let those guys speak. Well, hello, 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 all the right-wingers, where are you? I'm waiting. Don't do that. Come on, Mitch. What are you talking about? This is freedom of speech. Now, wait for it. The arguments are going to come out.
Well, that's not technically the legal, constitutional free speech issue because, see, what had happened was the sun was in their eyes and that the way that the statute can be implemented is that you don't need to break the rules of the Senate, so therefore it's okay in this instance specifically to censor her and shut her up. But whenever it's me and an issue I like and I agree with, in that case, how dare you ever shut us up?
No. Be fucking consistent. Because it's about the principle of the thing. Do you understand that? So, and this is why, again, I even take the side of the person who said the offensive thing or whatever it may be when it's corporations versus those people. Now, technically, a corporation does have the legal right to say, we don't like what you said and we don't want you to be a representative of our company, so we're just going to fire you. They have a legal right to do that. In other words, that does not violate the Constitution. But I always defend the people who say that because, to me, free speech is more than just about the constitutional right to free speech. So, in other words, the government can't throw you in jail or prison or take away your free speech rights. To me, it's about the principle of the thing. To me, even when, you know, you do have the legal right to say, you know what, we're going to, you know, fire you for that or censor you or ban you, I say, no, let the people speak, man. Let them speak, even if I vehemently disagree with them. Well, this is just such a clear case of this. By the way, that rule can be invoked all the fucking time. It is just a bullshit rule. This idea of you've impugned the you know, integrity of somebody else. Yeah, when you're giving a speech on the Senate floor and you're talking about political issues, guess what? You're going to be disagreeing with somebody. Of course, yes, if I'm up there and I'm giving a speech and I'm talking about President Trump, you have any idea how much I would go after him? And you could interpret anything I'm saying as impugning the integrity of him, even if I fucking quote him. Hey, we have to take out their families. We have to take out their families. Okay, well, so you want to do violence for a political reason against civilians. Well, let's look up the definition of that. That is the textbook definition of terrorism. Oh, how dare you impugn the integrity of President Trump. But I'm quoting him and giving you a definition. But you can spin anything as impugning the integrity. No, let her fucking speak. Let her speak. This isn't a question. This isn't a debate. And Mitch McConnell knows he's fucking wrong. Of course he knows he's wrong. So, spare me. And you want to know who is impugning the integrity of Jeff Sessions? Me. And anybody with a fucking brain. You know, you're not violating a rule by impugning the integrity of Jeff Sessions. You're being intelligent. You're looking at his fucking record to do that. Did you know he has a 0% rating? Zero! From the Human Rights Campaign. Which means he sides against the LGBTQ community 100% of the time. And I'm supposed to sit here and be a gentleman and say, oh, it's okay, even though you're a loathsome bigot and an asshole and your record and the policies you support prove that, I'll just sit here and act like it's all okay. So no opposition. No opposition. So for me to say you're a bigot because of your record, you've impugned his integrity. He impugned his own integrity. That's on him. He built that. I didn't make him vote against gays 100% of the time. Furthermore, we've discussed this before, too. What's his approval rating? I think from the ACLU, 20-something percent, something in the teens, maybe? We went through his record in detail one day. How do you side against civil liberty, human rights, over 80% of the time? This is a guy who said, and I quote, good people don't smoke marijuana.
And I'm supposed to bite my tongue. Elizabeth Warren's supposed to bite her tongue and not go up there and give you facts.
She is quoting the widow of the great Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And no, this is not open for debate or discussion. It's not like this is totally relevant when it's a letter from Coretta Scott King about approving Jeff Sessions in the 1980s for a federal judge position. I've never heard of anything more pertinent and more relevant than that. So, Mitch McConnell, you are a sleazy, loathsome cretin who wants to censor and ban all opinions that don't line up with yours. So now, you know, they want to play this game, the gloves are fucking off. I've already had it up to here with Mitch McConnell with his fucking garbage where he was on the, we covered the story yesterday. He's up there giving a speech. You know, the Democrat obstruction is historic and extreme, and I've never seen anything like this. The Democrat obstruction. You literally broke the filibuster record. You literally broke the record for obstructing a Supreme Court justice with Merrick Garland. You went over a year and you didn't even have a hearing. Never mind having the hearing and then rejected him. You tried to repeal Obamacare over 60 times, and you have the nerve to talk about the obstruction of the Democrats when, by the way, even Elizabeth Warren has buckled and voted for Ben Carson to be the head of Housing and Urban Development. Over 12 Democrats supported Pompeo for CIA head, much to my dismay. They should be obstructing people like Jeff Sessions because Jeff Sessions earned the obstruction, Mitch. It ain't equal. Don't give me some false equivalence bullshit. Merrick Garland, for all of his flaws, was a centrist, somewhat reasonable judge. Neil Gorsuch? He's not reasonable at all. He cried when Justice Scalia died. Justice Scalia, the guy who's an intellectual who says the devil is literally real. That guy, the guy who said blacks belong in slower track schools, the guy who wants to dismantle any and all campaign finance laws, this is what we're talking about? No, you earned the obstruction, and that's why you resort to tactics like this. So if I'm the Democrats, credit to Elizabeth Warren, because you know what you do in response to this? Now this clip has gone viral. People are looking at what the Republicans are doing. They see that they're for censorship and banning and shutting down the opposition by any means necessary. So now Elizabeth Warren's doing her interview circuit, going everywhere saying, look at these Republicans. They say, we're extreme. I've never seen anything more extreme than this. You're winning hearts and minds. You're upping your chances of winning in the next election. And I would tell all the Democrats, do this. Do this. Oh, so you're gonna shut down Elizabeth Warren for quoting Coretta Scott King in the Senate. Every Democrat, get up there. I want that same fucking quote ready to go. And you're going to make Mitch McConnell say, I'm invoking Rule 19 and saying that you have impugned the integrity because I don't believe in free speech and I'm a douchebag who tries to censor all dissenting opinions. So, yeah, we're going to have to shut you up. Ho-ho! All right, bitch. I'm going to make you shut every single one of them up. And then at the end of the day, how are you going to look? It appears like Mitch McConnell just banned over 40 Democratic senators from having their opinion heard on the Senate floor. And then they're going to scoff when we call them authoritarians. Motherfucker, you're so authoritarian, we need a new word to describe it. So I'm done with these clowns. All this garbage. Are you kidding me? This Democratic Party is a weak shell of itself. And you want to give facts about Jeff Sessions' record, and you want to quote Coretta Scott King about how bad he is. Censor, ban, shut down. You want obstruction, motherfucker? I'll give you obstruction. These clowns. Good on Elizabeth Warren for turning this situation into what it's supposed to be. The country rallying against an authoritarian buffoon. I want more of this. Because even if you don't have the numbers and you go down, you better go down swinging. Because that's what the country wants to see when we're talking about extremists like Jeff Sessions maybe becoming Attorney General. Okay. Okay, let's go to the next one. And this one is Bernie Sanders and Ted Cruz. So Bernie Sanders and Ted Cruz debated Obamacare last night on CNN, and I have to admit I have mixed feelings on it. So at times, Bernie was absolutely obliterating him. But then at other times, Ted Cruz lied so much and so insistently and persistently that if somebody went into it, you know, being a conservative and leaning more in Ted Cruz's direction, I don't think their minds were changed. I think they walk away going, yeah, Ted Cruz nailed it. And that's something that really, really frustrates me. You know, it's similar to the Bill Nye, Ken Ham debate. You remember that? Creationist Ken Ham, ridiculous human being, thinks the world is like 6,000 years old and that human beings rode on dinosaurs even though they died out 65 million years ago. Bill Nye debated evolution with him and was trying to be factual and straightforward and said, okay, no, this is how it works. Let me explain it. And Ken Ham is just a brainwashed, indoctrinated monster who's a misinformation machine. And he has an agenda, and he's pushing the agenda. Now, people will flip that back and say, well, Bill Nye has an evolution agenda. It's not an agenda when it's the facts. It's trying to spread the truth and what happened in empirical reality and objective reality. That's different. It's not equal. It's not a 50-50 thing here. Well, it's the same thing with Bernie Sanders versus Ted Cruz. You know, there is an answer out there. This isn't an amorphous, all right, well, you give me your opinion, you give me your opinion, and oh, look at that, it's 50-50, you guys pick. No, but there are actual answers out there on this topic. So this is something going way back. You know, I got interested in the topic of healthcare, and I said, okay, so what's the answer? Let me research this thing. And then when you actually do your research with an open mind, and you try to figure out, hey, okay, so who does it right, who does it wrong, what makes this system right versus this system being wrong, what are the best outcomes, what's the best prices, so on and so forth, you find out very quickly, it's not hard. You go, oh, okay, so the answer is apparently a single-payer system because everybody's covered and they pay less for higher quality care. Case closed. Next question. Now, again, so
a Picard and liberal bias.
No, that's not me speaking. That's the various studies speaking. So there's, of course, the famous one, which goes back a while, admittedly, but I think it was the year 2000. It was the World Health Organization. They did a comprehensive study of healthcare systems the world over. The United States ranked number 37. Now, again, you say, well, that's old. Fair enough. So there's a new one recently where it compared the United States to the other top modern nations. Out of all the other modern nations, I'm not sure if they did 11 countries total or 14, I forget. But the United States was dead last. So, again, not a matter of opinion, not up in the air. Factually speaking, the United States does healthcare worse. So Ted Cruz goes up there, and Ted Cruz is coming up with every bullshit talking point you can imagine. He had a sheet of paper with facts on it, but they're just anecdotal horror stories of what happened to people in single-payer systems.
Oh, there was a waiting line, and this person needed this surgery, and they didn't get it, and this person, they lost their dad, and their dad's name was this, and Bernie, what a monster you are for not caring about these people.
Now, everything was fudging facts left and right. So, for example, he loved to make the waiting lines point. The waiting lines in single-payer systems are for elective procedures. So in other words, not necessary procedures. I am choosing to get X, Y, or Z done. It's not a necessity, but I'm going to get X, Y, or Z done. So for that, you get put on a waiting list because they prioritize based on need. That crazy idea. So he goes, they ration care. Ted, we ration it here. Over there, they ration it based on need. Over here, we ration it based on the size of your wallet. And all the horror stories about all the people in the single-payer systems and, oh, my God, Bernie, I can't believe you don't feel for these people. Ted, we have 45,000 people that die every single year in the United States of America because they don't have access to basic health care. That number in Canada is zero. That number in France is zero. That number in Australia is zero. That number in Norway, Denmark, Iceland, Sweden is zero, 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 zero. So where were your stories on your little fact sheet about any of those 45,000 people that died because they don't have access to basic health care? And Ted kept ranting against the government in his speech. Ted, Medicare, the American people say that Medicare is the best of the health care systems that we have. So people love Medicare. You know what they hate? The private insurance companies. You want to know why, Ted? Because they're for-profit, rapacious, price-gouging, unnecessary middlemen. That's why. You want to talk about death panels? There's no death panels in Obamacare. You want to know where there is death panels? In the private health companies. Think about the incentive structure that they've set up in the private insurance companies, I should say. They make more money the more they deny people care. Because think about it. So they're a for-profit entity. So they want to pad that bottom line and take care of their shareholders. Well, how do you do that? Well, you've got to try to wiggle out of paying for everybody's care who submits a claim. Hey, look, you violated this clause when you signed up. You told us you didn't have any pre-existing conditions. It turns out you did have a pre-existing condition. We can't pay for your cancer treatment. We can't pay for this issue. We can't pay for that spleen surgery or whatever the fuck. So they try to wiggle out of paying for it. This is the nature of the system. This is how it works in the United States of America. This isn't an issue in other modern countries. It's like in the movie John Q. Sick, that's other modern nations. You know how you and I spent, what is it, over $16 trillion to bail out Wall Street? You know how you and I spent, when all said and done, $7 trillion in Iraq? Other countries take their resources, and one of the first things they put it into is healthcare for people and education for people. So we waste our money in a variety of different ways, and then people have the nerve, like Ted Cruz, they turn around and say, well, we can't afford single-payer health care. Notice, whenever it's something for you, can't afford it. Where's the money? We're fiscal hawks here. We're deficit hawks. We can't afford it. They have never said, you know, bombing Syria, not sure we have the money for it. You know, I'm not sure we can find the money for that. That's great. Bailing out Wall Street, the people who crashed their companies and crashed the economy, bankrupted their companies and crashed the economy, I don't know about that. We don't have the money for it. For them, blank check. For the military-industrial complex, blank check. For you and me, we don't have the money. Never have the money for the people, always have the money for the special interest and for the donors. So that's why I have mixed feelings on it, because at times Bernie was kicking his ass. But I try to always divorce my bias when I'm watching these things. And obviously I'm biased in favor of Bernie because I love Bernie and I despise Ted Cruz. But there were times where I'm watching it where I'm going, God damn, Ted Cruz just told like 32 lies in a matter of 2 minutes and said all these misleading things and these false things and gave people the misimpression that a single-payer system is monstrous. And I don't know, there are people out there who don't know healthcare as well as I do, and they go, oh, well, obviously Ted is right. The big bad government is the problem. Again, Medicare ranked way higher in the United States. People love Medicare. The private health insurance companies are the problem. So final thing I'll bring up is there were times in the debate when I really wanted to shove a fork in my eye. Because Ted Cruz, for example, called universal health care, quote, pixie dust. And at one point he compared it to buying a bus ticket, and at another point he compared it to buying a Lamborghini. Not everybody can have a Lamborghini, because, you know, Lamborghini, that's the best and that's expensive, and not everybody has the money for a Lamborghini. Did you really just compare health care to a Lamborghini? Is that really what you just did? It's like, what's his face? He said it on Twitter and got a bunch of shit, rightfully so. Ben Shapiro. He's like, Bernie tweeted something about it. Isn't it crazy that healthcare isn't a right? And he said something like, isn't it crazy that I went into this store and couldn't get this expensive furniture? What? It's crazy that in their minds they think, like, nailed it. Nailed what? You made yourself look like a fool. Yeah, Ted, universal health care is pixie dust. If only, like every other modern nation on the planet, had already achieved it to just show us it was possible. Oh, that's right, that is the case. So, Ted Cruz, he's taken hundreds of thousands of dollars from the health industry, so just keep that in mind, and that does taint his opinion. So, in summation, just like in Bill Nye versus Ken Ham, Bill Nye is 100% correct. Ken Ham's a silly person. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's a fool. He has an agenda. Bernie Sanders is 100% correct based on the evidence, based on the data, based on the studies, based on the facts. He is just correct. He is right, factually right. And Ted Cruz is a smarmy, lying, sleazy motherfucker who wants to roll the clock back even pre-Obamacare. Obamacare was just a Band-Aid with ointment over a gangrenous wound that is our healthcare system. Ted Cruz is like, let's fucking rip off that Band-Aid and let me jam this knife back into that wound a little bit, and then everything will be great. No, that'll make it worse, Ted. It'll make it worse. We want more people to lose their health insurance. wants to roll back the clock and wants to go full capitalist privatization, which is a dog-eat-dog world for health insurance and health care. Don't get me wrong. In some ways, in some areas, competition works great. And, you know, you make the best video games and the best cars and the best consumer goods if there's competition. Wonderful. There are some things where the profit motive is a perverse incentive and it ruins it. You know, whether it be the military, you don't want mercenary armies everywhere, whether it be roads and bridges and infrastructure, you want to pay every time you turn onto a road, okay, you got to pay for this, got to pay for that, got to pay for this. Same thing with healthcare and health insurance. So Bernie is right, Ted is wrong, and parts of the debate I liked, other parts I wanted to bang my head against the wall because Ted Cruz is either the most misinformed and brainwashed person in the country or he's a liar. Okay. All right, so let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the media's abysmal failure and establishment Democrat extraordinaire. Actually, you know what? Fuck me. I can't even take a break. I got too much to get to. All right, you know what I'll do? I'm going to take the world's quickest break. And then when we come back, we will talk about the abysmal failure of our media, the establishment Democrats are fighting back, the Empire Strikes Back, and President Trump's wild claim about the media that we're going to correct. So we got all that and more. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. I want to take a little bit here to talk about the establishment media. Now, we've discussed what their biases are previously, but I want to refresh everybody because I think you're seeing it quite often nowadays. So one of the problems with the mainstream media is that they have what I call a sensationalism bias. A sensationalism bias basically means that they're going to cover the things that are going to get eyeballs even if they're irrelevant to people's lives and to what the news should be. So, for example, you're going to get the Kanye West-Donald Trump meeting, and oh my goodness, isn't this incredible? And they're going to cover that for way longer than they should, and it's going to overshadow very important issues, like, for example, Saudi Arabia slaughtering women and children in Yemen with weapons that we give them, and we know it's going on. See, that's a real scandal. To discuss Trump and Kanye endlessly is you're doing the equivalent of a cat chasing the laser pointer. So, but that's our media. So one of their biases is sensationalism. They want to get more eyeballs. They're for-profit entities. So, okay, you got to sprinkle in a story about Kim Kardashian or Kanye West or Lady Gaga or Beyonce or whatever because that's what people want to see. Or they think that's what people want to see, and that's the only way they can keep eyeballs on them. I'd like to think that what we're doing and what other new media outlets are doing are proving that mindset incorrect. But that's how they think. Okay, there's a sensationalism bias. There's also a neutrality bias on many of these outlets. So what does that mean? You know, when you hear the word neutrality, many people who don't follow politics closely, they might go, what's wrong with that? I don't see the problem with that. You want media outlets to be neutral, right? You want them to be fair to both sides. I mean, that's what that means. But there's a problem. Neutrality is not the same thing as objectivity. What you really want your media outlet to be is objective. Because objective means I'm going to tell the truth no matter what and no matter what partisan direction it may point in or no matter how black and white the truth may be on certain issues, I'm not going to kowtow and coddle the feelings of people who are wrong, who are screaming that we're biased against them. The facts are the facts, and if the facts say you're wrong, you're wrong. So you want an objective media that's not afraid to tell the truth no matter where the truth leads. What you do not want is a neutral media, because neutrality means I'm going to call it 50-50 no matter what. So, okay, tell me anything. Evolution versus intelligent design? Okay, it's 50-50. Let's hear out the intelligent design people. Let's hear out the evolution people. Okay, climate change. You say it's happening. You say it's not happening. Let me give 50-50 time to both, and that is what it is. But they're actually misinforming you if they stick to the neutrality principle. And they're actually, if you really think about it, on many issues, it's a conservative bias when they have a neutrality bias. Because if you're giving undue credit to the climate change is fake people, well, then you're biasing the debate in their direction because they are wrong and you're still giving them credit. So remember that. That's really important. But the most important bias that the mainstream media has, and when I say mainstream media, I'm talking CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, CBS, NBC, ABC, the nightly news, they have an establishment bias. Now, what that means is they don't rock the boat because they are the boat. You have the same people who control these big corporations, corporate media. The same people that do that go to the same parties with the Democratic and Republican senators and congresspeople. They are the elite. They run these multi-billion dollar entities. They have a stranglehold on the market. So they don't want anybody messing that up. So what does that mean? It means that when you hire people who you think are not too radical. They're within the spectrum of debate that we allow. They're within the Overton window that we've set up. So that's why, for example, on CNN, you have a milquetoast clown like Don Lemon, who's never said anything interesting in his life. You have Wolf Blitzer, who might literally be a robot. And you have people, even your hard-hitting journalists like Anderson Cooper. Is he really all that hard-hitting? I've seen him let politicians get away with the most egregious lies. So, and he loves to play that neutrality bias. In fact, he said on Howard Stern, I think it was, he said, oh, I don't vote. Howard's like, what the fuck? What are you talking about? Why? He's like, well, I think that would pollute my job as being a journalist. I'm supposed to be neutral. So he's taken his role to mean I can't have an opinion about anything, and I can't even have an opinion based on the facts. I'm so neutral that I don't even vote, I don't even care about it, I don't even think a journalist should vote. That is the craziest fucking thing I've ever heard. You should care about the news, you should care about the real world, you should care about the facts, you should care about, you know, saying Bernie Sanders is a better person and his policies would affect people in a more positive way than Ted Cruz is just a fact. Nope, I can't say that, I'm Anderson Cooper. So these are the kinds of people that they hire. They hire people who don't rock the boat. Look, don't get crazy here. The spectrum of debate that's allowed is establishment Republicans and establishment Democrats, and that's it. Nothing outside of that. So, and this is why they're failing, and this is why their numbers are abysmal. Now, I tell you all that to tell you this. Justice Democrats launched a little over 2 weeks ago. So far, we have over 115,000 supporters. There are over 115,000 Justice Democrats in just a little over 2 weeks. I'm not sure you could find another movement that exploded that quickly. Furthermore, we're almost at $500,000 raised. Remember, we are taking zero money from corporations and big money donors. Zero money. So this is all nurses and cashiers and construction workers and accountants and teachers and regular people, security guards, you name it, regular people. So we raised almost $500,000. By the way, totally nonprofit venture. I get $0.00 for this. I wouldn't have it any other way. Cenk Uygur, $0.00 for this. Everybody's working for the actual cause of trying to get real progressives and liberals who are not corrupt into our government. And we now have nearly 3,000 people, guys, 3,000 who said, I want to run, because that's what this is all about. We're building a movement to primary the shit out of the corporate Democrats because we think they've destroyed the party and they're corrupt. So we want people who are not corrupt to bring the party back to what it's supposed to be all along, a representative of the people, a representative of workers, a representative of the policies that the American people want according to the polls. We have almost 3,000 people who said, I want to run, I want to be a Justice Democrat, I want to primary this corporate Democrat in my district, I'm ready to go, man, let's do it. So they're vetting the candidates, they're training the candidates. Remember, Shoykat Chakrabarty and Zach Exley, these are people who were top Bernie Sanders campaign officials. They're the ones who are doing all the hard infrastructure work and dotting the I's and crossing the T's and dealing with that aspect of it. So one would think, that is quite an interesting story. You have what is effectively a left Tea Party. Now, by the way, don't do a false equivalence here. They're the same as them because the Tea Party was pretty much wrong on their policy solutions. We are representing what the American people want according to the polling data. So, but in our strategy and our technique, it's a hostile takeover of the Democratic Party. So we have what is effectively a left Tea Party roaring up from out of nowhere over 100,000 people in a little over 2 weeks. Where's the mainstream media? I don't hear them. What's going on? There were a few instances. You know, I spoke the other day about how Tom Perez, the establishment pick for DNC head, this guy's pro-TPP, he was in Obama's administration, he heard about us. He's like, oh, shit, this is wild. Howard Dean mentioned, oh, yeah, you know, people are organizing. He was referring to Justice Democrats. He didn't say us by name. By the way, we don't support him because he's a corporate sellout. He just knows of our existence and briefly brought us up on MSNBC. Outside of that and some print outlets and some new media outlets that did some good coverage of Justice Democrats, we ain't on CNN. They haven't called us by name on MSNBC. Fox News has dick to say. ABC, CBS, NBC, the nightly news. I don't hear anything. Let me explain something to you guys. I know this business. That's a slap in the fucking face. They don't take you seriously. They are on another level of condescension that I don't think I've ever seen before. You want to know why? Because you're progressive. Look at how they treated Bernie Sanders during the primary committee. Please. They would show Donald Trump's empty podium while Bernie Sanders was giving a rousing speech to tens of thousands of people. There were nights where Bernie Sanders won a bunch of primaries. They didn't show him. They gave him little to no coverage. You want to know why? Because you're progressive. They go, oh, look at these naive kids. You know how the millennial scorn is a big thing? Where, oh, millennials are lazy bitches or addicted to technology. Blah, blah, blah. This is what the older generation said. And meanwhile, they don't get that they crashed the fucking economy and allowed money in politics, and we have a broken system, and that's their fucking fault. But they look down at you. It's condescension. Oh, they'll get over it. These young kids who think they have all the answers. Guess what, bitch? We actually do our research. We actually have the internet, and we have the world available at our fingertips. And it turns out millennials know what the fuck is going on more than you ever did. And they look down on you. Isn't that amazing? You happen to know that the United States of America is one of just two other nations that doesn't have paid maternity leave by law, the others being Oman and Papua New Guinea. You happen to know that the United States is the only modern nation that doesn't have paid vacation by law. You happen to know that we're the only modern nation that doesn't have universal health care. You happen to know that even Slovenia has done a universal college system, and we don't. We have a student loan debt crisis in this country, over $1 trillion, and you can't even file for bankruptcy on that, so a lot of people are paying it into their 70s. You happen to know that a minimum wage is not a living wage. Meanwhile, in Australia, the minimum wage is over $15 an hour. You happen to know that collective bargaining raises the standard of living for middle-class people. You happen to know that we're doing 7 interventions right now, including 2 full-scale wars. You happen to know that over 50% of the discretionary budget goes towards the military. The war in Iraq will cost $7 trillion when all is said and done. That the bailout of Wall Street was over $16 trillion. You know how broken and corrupt and backwards this system is. So you're angry, and you rise up. And you say, no more of this. Step aside, bitch. We're taking over. And they don't even cover you. Over 100,000 people in just 2 weeks. The Tea Party didn't have numbers like that. The Tea Party, there were 17 dudes in somebody's front lawn named Cletus at the beginning. All the Tea Party, Tea Party, Tea Party rally, Tea Party, Tea Party, Tea Party, Tea Party, Tea Party. Glenn Beck, look, oh, Glenn Beck, you're so wise, and let's cover you for fucking 17 hours straight and talk about how genuine populist uprising, and man, these people know what they're talking about, even though they're holding up signs that says, take your government hands off my Medicare. Oh, cover Tea Party, Tea Party, oh my God, this is such an organic movement, and it's natural, and it's rising up, and it's grassroots. But when we launch a movement, when progressives and liberals launch a movement that is fundamentally anti-corruption and anti-establishment and represents what the people want to see implemented, they don't even have anything to say to you. They got nothing to say. I'll pass on that story, please. We have more important things to cover. Hello, didn't something else happen with Kanye today? Let's cover that endlessly. What did President Trump tweet? Did he say something that was interesting? Quick, let's put up the breaking news banner on that. Oh, over 100,000 progressives in just over 2 weeks have gotten together, and almost 3,000 of them have promised to run, and they've raised almost $500,000 in that short time span. Not even interesting enough for a brief fucking mention. I tell you all that to remind you, this is an uphill battle, and we're fighting to win here. So they don't want to cover us, even though we're the most newsworthy story that there's ever been in human history? Fine, fuck them. We don't need them. We don't need them. We just need each other. We got new media. We have each other. There's a real grassroots uprising happening right now where the Bernie wing is taking over the Democratic Party because our philosophy is what the Democrats were supposed to believe and represent all along. They don't need to validate our story. We're going to fucking validate it ourselves. And probably one of the biggest reasons they're not going to cover us is, well, we haven't gotten the blessing of the corporations and the billionaires now, have we? Because our movement is fundamentally opposed to them. So don't cover these, you know, these rowdy kids who think they're actually going to make the United States like other modern nations. silly kids. Obviously, we raid the treasury and loot the treasury and give it to the corporations, and we have an oligarchy in this country. Step aside. No, how about you fucking step aside? How about you're going to hear us roar? How about your time is up? JusticeDemocrats.com. I need you to go there, sign your name in support of the movement. When that number hits 1 million, guess what? They're still going to try to ignore it. at a certain point, they won't be able to, though. And then they move on to phase two and phase three. There's going to be a smearing phase where, oh, yeah, no, this is a fucking ruse and it's a scam and these people are fucking bad people and look at the leaders of the movement. Oh, God, a little fucking YouTube host guy. And look, he curses sometimes in his videos. Oh, he's ungentlemanly. Oh, they're going to smear the shit out of us. And then they're going to move on to the next step at some point, which is, oh, no, we were with them all along. I'm a Justice Democrat. I don't know what you're talking about. We're Justice Democrats. Great. God, they're too powerful, and they keep getting elected. Anyway, and by the way, again, with Tom Perez, there were signs of this already. He's like, oh, shit. We got these progressive lions roaring up, and they know I'm pro-TPP. Uh-oh. Howard Dean, corporate sellout boy on MSO. Ooh, shit. Uh-oh. You know, they're organizing. Look out. Now, again, they're not mentioning us by name, and there's only two mentions I heard so far. But we don't need them is point number one. And point number two is, at some point, we're going to make them say our name, bitch. Because when you have people power behind you, it's undeniable. So let's fight and let's win. JusticeDemocrats.com. Sign your name in support of the movement. By the way, I love how some people are they look down on the movement and they're progressive, but understand, you act like, oh, this isn't, you know, there's not enough information about this. You can run, like, this idea of transparency. Yeah, I don't like this. You don't like it, why don't you run? How about you run, you'll get vetted, and if you make the cut, then you can run as a Justice Democrat. What problem is there with that? The whole movement is based on the polling data with the stuff that you believe, the American people believe, and the American people are progressives, according to the polls. It's that mixed with zero corporate money and zero billionaire money, and you running to take over the party. It's you. It ain't me. It ain't Cenk. It's the platform, the ideas behind it, the philosophy, and you running to take over the Democratic Party and get rid of the establishment and get rid of the corporatists. What the fuck could be wrong with that? There is literally nothing wrong with that. That is the most organic grassroots thing that there could ever be. So let's rise up and let's take this party back and let's make them hear us. Let's get to 1 million Justice Democrats and we have to win. We have no option. Is it going to work? I don't know. I don't have a fucking crystal ball, but we have to try. This is the movement. It's happening right now. JusticeDemocrats.com. Let's go do it. Okay. Okay. Next. Establishment Democrat extraordinaire Rahm Emanuel spoke to the Chicago Tribune and laid out his vision for what the Democrats should do going forward.
In 2016 now, Democrats are at the lowest level since 1928 in the House of Representatives and the lowest level since 1925. In the state houses. Not really good. Okay? I know you didn't pay me the big bucks to come here and tell you that, but it is hard to imagine it getting lower. So there's a lot of different policies. One, you got to go out and create a farm team. You know, in 06 and 08, everybody goes, oh, that's when we took back the House. You know, I got a lot of crap for recruiting Iraq and war vets, football players, sheriffs, business people. I said, well, they're running in Republican districts. I wanted to take cultural issues off the table and wanted to present economic issues. We recruited people who matched the district. If you're running in a Republican district, you got to get at somebody who can win in a Republican district. Winning's everything. You don't win, you can't make the public policy. I say that because it is hard for people in our party to accept that principle. Sometimes you just got to win. Okay? Stop arguing about Democrats love doing a firing squad in the circle. Stop it. Okay? Don't attack. He's, oh, they're too moderate. That was, forget about it.
I've never seen an analysis more wrong than that. So let's go through it here. He said, he basically said, look, Dems are at the lowest point since like the 1920s, and they're absolutely obliterated. That's right, Rom. You want to know why? Because of your philosophy, which has been implemented and has been stuck to. So Rahm Emanuel was in the Obama administration. Obviously, he left at a certain point, and he went back to Chicago. But your ideology lingered. The neoliberal, new Democrat, centrist, pro-corporate, pro-establishment variety, the moderate variety, as you would call it, and the results are the very thing that you're bemoaning. The results of what you did are the lowest Democratic numbers since the 1920s. Republicans hold a majority of state legislatures, majority of governorships, the majority in the House of Representatives, the majority in the Senate, and obviously the presidency. And he's up there like, gosh, you know, these fucking rabid progressives who've been in control all along, isn't it their fault? So then he says, you got to get somebody who can win in a Republican district. People got mad at me because I was recruiting. He used all the, oh, football players and farmers. And no. That's all code word for I was recruiting moderates to run in GOP districts. And when people got mad at me, I said, what do you mean? They got to win in a, be able to win in a GOP district. But see, that's the thing, Rom. You're wrong because you don't actually believe in liberal and progressive values. You said it right there. Oh, I'm winning. I believe in winning. But your philosophy on how to win is wrong. And it's wrong because you don't actually believe in liberal and progressive values. So let me give you a fact that many people don't know. Bernie Sanders, when we're talking about many of the states like Kentucky, for example, during the primary, did you know Bernie Sanders overwhelmingly won people who described themselves as more conservative? So you're thinking, wait, what? So in the Democratic primary, you had people who were voting who said, yeah, I'm a Democrat, but I'm really conservative. But they went overwhelmingly for Bernie Sanders? Because here's the reality. It ain't about labels. I'm conservative, I'm liberal, I'm Republican, I'm Democrat, I'm this, I'm that. None of that matters to people, and they don't even know what they really mean, those labels. So you have somebody who says, I'm conservative, and then you go through the checklist. Do you think we should have a Medicare for All system? Well, yeah, Medicare is great. My grandma used it, and she loved it. My mama's on it right now. Do you believe we should raise the minimum wage to a living wage? Well, of course. I know my buddy making $7.25. He can't afford to put food on the table. What you talking about? You know, you go through the list, and there many Republicans have social democratic tendencies. This is what Rahm Emanuel doesn't know or he doesn't care about because he himself does not agree with those people. So when he says, well, you're running in a GOP district, so you got to run somebody who's conservative. Except we tried that, and those people got fucking obliterated. Look at what happened with Alison Lundergan Grimes. This is Rahm Emanuel's perfect candidate. Well, what do you mean? She's like a cleaned-up Mitch McConnell. She's Republican light, and she's a good, young, good-looking female running against old turtle boy Mitch McConnell, who's a hardcore Republican. Well, guess what? Alison Lundergan Grimes was such a centrist slash corporatist slash moderate and such a Republican light kind of character. She did ads shooting guns. Yeah, I'm Kentucky through and through. She was asked in a press conference, did you vote for Obama? She wouldn't even say she voted for Obama, and she's running as a fucking Democrat. Guess what? Mitch McConnell beat her, even though Mitch McConnell had historic unfavorables in Kentucky, and he was super vulnerable. Why? Because we ran your kind of Democrat. We ran the moderates, we ran the Republican lights, and they got their ass handed to them. You act like we haven't tried your philosophy. We've tried it, and that's what led to the wipeout. Furthermore, winning is everything. Actually, it's not, because if you win and then you have Republican-light characters in there, they're going to push for Republican-light policies. So that's not a win for progressives. That's not a win for liberals. That's a win for Republican-light. That's a win for the corporations and the establishment. But that's the thing. That's all he really cares about. Rahm Emanuel isn't a true progressive. He's not a true liberal. He doesn't care about the issues. He loves the establishment. So when he says, oh, winning is all that matters, but if you win and then, for example, you have a supermajority and you get a shitty right-wing reform like Obamacare, we're not happy because you had a supermajority and you could have gotten single payer. But you didn't. So So when do we ever get liberal policies? When do we ever get progressive policies? You get a Republican in there, boom, they push for ultra-conservative policies. You get a Democrat in there, they push for centrist policies, center-right policies. So when do you get liberal policies? Never, never, never. Because the guys like Rahm Emanuel who've decimated the party. And, what was that last part? And the last point is he brought up moderate. I'm like, oh, you got to stop with this purity test. Well, you're moderate. Too moderate. No, but see, if we actually use that philosophy and use that ideology that we are liberals who believe in liberalism, we're progressives who believe in progressivism, we're actually principled. We take no corporate money. We take no big donor money. We fight for the issues. And by the way, the polls show the American people are on our side. Then we can't lose. So what you're saying, the exact opposite is true. This idea of like, well, what do you mean? You just got to accept all the moderates and that'll work. No, but we already did. And that's why we're at this shitty place now. So we need Democrats who are actually going to represent what the Democrats are supposed to represent, and that's how we win. So Justice Democrats is the answer. And guys like Rahm Emanuel are enemies of Justice Democrats because he thinks we're the problem. But remember, it hasn't been us in control of the Democratic Party all this time. It's been him. And now we're at the low point. When we get in there, we will bring us to a high point, and that I can guarantee you. Okay, next. Okay. President Trump made a wild claim this week about the media, and it's getting a lot of attention. Let's watch.
Radical Islamic terrorists are determined to strike our homeland as they did on 9/11, as they did from Boston to Orlando to San Bernardino, and all across Europe. You've seen what happened in Paris and Nice. All over Europe, it's happening. It's gotten to a point where it's not even being reported. And in many cases, the very, very dishonest press doesn't want to report it.
So CNN heard that and they were like, huh? So they decided to do a search on Nexus, I think it's called. It's this database of all the, you know, news articles and things on the wire and a bunch of different things. So they looked it up and they found that, oh, I should say before I get to that, I should say that people pressed him on this afterwards. Like, hey man, that's a bold claim. The media is not covering terrorism. Do you have examples? And it was either Trump himself or Sean Spicer, the press spokesperson, who was like, we'll get you a list. And so then they actually released a list. But you read the list, and you're like, huh? Pretty sure these were covered. So CNN actually did a database search of it, and they found that the 78 terrorist attacks that the White House mentioned and said, these are the ones that you didn't cover. By the way, at first they said, oh, you didn't cover it. And then they moved the goalpost to, well, you didn't cover it enough. That's a giant backpedal, because there's a big difference. Oh, you didn't cover it versus, hey, cover it enough. So of the 78 terror attacks on the list, there were a grand total of 80,878 stories about it, or slightly more than 1,000 mentions per incident. This goofball is like, they don't cover it. Tremendous. Sad. Believe me. Let me just tell you, they don't cover it. And they're like, okay, let's look that up. Oh, shit, there's over a thousand mentions / articles, references, whatever, per incident. Look, man, his hardcore supporters don't care. They don't care. They'll just be like, whatever. It's true enough. True enough that they don't cover terrorism. I've done stories obsessing about how much they cover it. Bill Maher has mentioned this too. At a certain point, he says it's disaster porn. Where you're not learning anything new. You're just looking at what happens. Oh, wrong. This is terrible. So bad. Let's just focus on it and keep the breaking news banner up to get ratings. You know, you could argue some haven't been covered enough. Like, for example, obviously if something happens in Nice, France, that got covered a lot more than an attack in Lebanon or Iraq or Syria or Yemen. Like, when there were these attacks there, it's like, oh, well, you know how crazy that region is. Muslims killing other Muslims, so don't worry about that. But, oh, all of these good white people in France got killed. Anyway, let's cover that endlessly. So, but either way, they cover it. They're covering it, and I don't know where he gets this shit from. And furthermore, this is projection, because every time there's a terror attack by Muslims, Trump is tweeting about it. We got to get smart, you know, protect our borders. This is what we got to do. We got to protect our borders and get smart because the Muslims, you know how they are. Yeah, we got to get smart. But then the other day, there was the terror attack in a mosque that was done by a rabid white nationalist. Trump had nothing to say on Twitter. Remember, every time there's a terror attack and it's a Muslim, it's on Twitter. Oh, yeah, I told you. Oh, yeah, people are... One time he said people are congratulating me, but I don't want to be right or something like that. What the fuck? You just said you accepted congratulations because there was a terror attack? What the fuck is wrong with you? But when it was a white kid who did it in Canada recently, later on when people called him out for it, like, hey, you got a lot to say about terrorism. 6 people just got killed by this white terrorist. Then the White House released a statement like, oh, yeah, no, totally, we're outraged. So I think there's a little bit of hypocrisy here because he has double standards when discussing terrorism and the ones that count versus the ones that don't. But him bringing it up that the media is not covering it enough. Well, the numbers show that they're covering it quite a bit. Okay, next. Donald Trump was smooth-talked into supporting civil asset forfeiture yesterday. So reporter Ryan Riley explains here. During a meeting with sheriffs on Tuesday, President Donald Trump got a misleading lesson on the controversial practice of asset forfeiture. Almost immediately, Trump encouraged the sheriffs to use it more aggressively. Asset forfeiture is a hugely lucrative weapon in the law enforcement arsenal, allowing cops to seize property from both criminals and suspected criminals and direct those proceeds into their department coffers. Although police officials often claim they're just taking money from drug dealers, that's a drastic oversimplification. So we've discussed horror stories on civil asset forfeiture in the past. And there are cases of police departments like building themselves a little coffee shop inside the police department with money that was seized through civil asset forfeiture. There are examples of normal law-abiding citizens having their house confiscated as a result of civil asset forfeiture, or people driving across the country and getting stopped, and they happen to have a couple $1,000 on them. The police officer just stole it. Well, I'm decreeing that this is part of a drug crime, and so I'm just going to take it. Really, what evidence do you have that it's a drug crime? None. But you have a lot of money, and I stopped you, so I'm going to take it. The fuck is this? I mean, that is preposterous. You've legalized robbery if the cops are doing it. If they have a badge, they just get to declare, well, I think this is something to do with drugs, so I'm just going to take it. And then you have to prove you're innocent. It flips the burden of proof. It is massively unconstitutional. I have no idea how it's still allowed. There needs to be a Supreme Court case over this because I actually think it would get struck down. I think even some conservative justices would say, yeah, no, you can't do that. So this is a horrific procedure, but Trump, because he's an idiot, was smooth-talked into it by some sheriffs who were like, you know what we're doing here? I watched some of the clip. They're like, what we're doing here is we're stopping these drug cartels. We're trying to stop the drug cartels from inflicting all this harm and damage in our great community. And so we got to have the ability to take all their stuff because of drug cartels, man. What do you want to be, weak on the drug cartels? Trump's like, sad, no, I want to be strong on the drug cartels. Law and order. So anyway, yeah, I'm going to legalize the cops robbing people. So he's going further in that direction now. So you want to know how bad of a problem this really is? Law enforcement seizes about $5 billion a year in civil asset forfeiture. Again, we've legalized robbery for police officers in the country. That's what this is. It's that simple. And idiot boy Trump with his low IQ and his bluster was so easily talked into it. Like, any decent person of reasonable intelligence, especially if you're president, if you don't know about this issue, fine. I think you should if you're even running for president, but fine, you don't know about it. Whatever. Wouldn't you stop and, like, read about it and go, oh, well, let me see what's actually going on here? No, just some douchebag sheriff is like, oh, we need it, and we got drug cartels are bad, so we're going to fight them, so we need it. Tremendous, believe me. No, fucking read about it. See what's actually going on here. $5 billion a year. People have had their lives ruined by civil asset forfeiture, and they got nothing to do with drugs or anything. And then the process to actually get your property back costs a shitload of money on top of it. And sometimes you get kneecapped, and you can't get it back. And it's, again, it flipped the burden of proof. So now you have to prove, how do you prove that money that had nothing to do with drugs has nothing to do with drugs? What's your evidence? Your evidence is, I don't have any drugs or anything. But they don't accept that as evidence. They're like, oh, okay, so your evidence is you don't have any drugs in your house, you don't have any drugs in your car, but the cops still took the money. I don't know, maybe you got rid of the drugs. You can't prove a negative. So this is why the burden of proof of innocent until proven guilty, that makes sense. The burden is on the state to say, here's all the evidence of your guilt, and now goes to a jury, and you need to decide, is there a reasonable doubt that this person is guilty? For this, you flip the burden of proof. Oh, you're just guilty by definition. We're going to take your shit, and then you have to try to go get it back and prove that you didn't do anything wrong. How do you prove you didn't do anything wrong if you didn't do anything wrong? You just didn't do anything wrong. Oh, we're going more and more down the road of a police state, and it's horrific. Okay. Going to do a quick story on DAPL, and then we'll do Brian Fisher, and then that'll probably be it for the day. We have some terrible news here for the environment, Huffington Post reports. The Army said Tuesday it will abandon an environmental study of the Dakota Access Pipeline and grant a permit that allows its completion. The decision follows an executive action from President Donald Trump that sought to resume construction on the 1,172-mile oil pipeline despite objections from a Native American tribe. So, of course, they're referring to the Standing Rock Sioux there. And their point is, well, hold on now. This threatens our water source for the reservation. That's true. It disturbs sacred grounds, and it violates a 19th century treaty that Native Americans have with the federal government. Yeah, all that is true. Here's Trump's response. I don't care. I don't care. And I haven't even brought up the environmental impact. This was supposed to go through, I think it was Bismarck, but it was supposed to go through somewhere else, the pipeline. And then in the largely white community, they were like, we don't want that fucking thing going through here. What if it spills? And the oil company's like, that's right. Let's send it through the Native American land. Oh, it's like you got to get one last fuck you into the Native Americans real fast. Terrible idea. By the way, a pipeline exploded, like, close to this pipeline. I love how they're like, hey, what are you talking about? It's safe, you fucking stupid liberal environmentalist hippie idiots. It's totally safe. Oh, shit, did a pipeline just explode, like, right near us? Yes, this is horrible. And furthermore, like, we are just casually marching towards obliteration when it comes to the environment. Like, I don't think people really get the dire situation that we're in with climate change. I mean, every time I see an article on this and governmental bodies are talking about it, they say, oh, yeah, just a heads up real quick. This is worse than the worst-case scenario that we predicted like 10 years ago. That's cool. This is fine. It's like that meme. This is fine. The house is fucking burning down. So you have, increase in natural disasters. You have temperature records shattered. You have a new report found that the Middle East, certain parts of the Middle East, may be uninhabitable by the year 2100. You think you have a refugee crisis now with Syria? Wait until you get to that. There can be wars over water, drought, famine. I mean, we're talking about as disastrous an event as you could get, trillions of dollars worth of damage. And what's the response from the United States? Now, under Obama and under the Democrats, they try to push us like 10% in the right direction. Like, okay, Paris Accord, Paris Treaty, you know, they're trying. Okay, new emission standards, new regulations for coal plants, they're just inching us in the right direction ever so slightly. We got to go way further in the right direction. But Trump comes in and the Republicans are like, anyway, let's take a giant shit over all the, you know, the progress that's been made. And they're just full speed ahead in the wrong direction. So I support the water protectors. I support the Dakota Access Pipeline protesters. We were able to succeed against Obama. Let's fight and try to succeed against the Trump administration. And hopefully there can be some sort of a heroic comeback or blocking of the completion of the pipeline. Okay. Christian fundamentalist radio host Brian Fisher is going to do some awesome mental gymnastics here on whether or not Jesus would support Trump's Muslim ban.
So, Jeff, you were saying on the break that you had a question or two about the whole immigration thing.
Yeah, I do. But you pretty much answered it in that column right there. That was pretty thorough. But I guess I have another one related. I'm starting noticing a lot of people on social media and in personal life that are asking the question, would Jesus be in favor of walls or immigration and things like that? And I started wondering about that. I mean, then we hear stuff about the pearly gate, which is some kind of entrance. The New Jerusalem, I think in Revelation 21, where he talks about a high wall, a great wall was built with 12 gates. Mm-hmm. And even Lazarus and the rich man, he fixed a chasm in between. Isn't Jesus, and I don't want this to sound sacrilegious, but isn't Jesus or God the Father doing some extreme vetting on who he's allowing to spend eternity with him and who is not? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's actually a powerful analogy that Jeff is suggesting. I mean, you talk about the ultimate form of immigration is from earth into the kingdom in the age to come. That's the ultimate form of immigration. You migrate from here to there, and you have got to have a valid entry pass, or you're not going to be let in. You can't just go in there because you want to. You've got to have a permit. You've got to be vetted, and you've got to have the right certifications to be able to go through the pearly gates. Otherwise, the gates are shut, and you are on the outside. So that's actually a powerful. So, yeah, would Jesus be in favor of restricting immigration? Absolutely.
That was awesome, watching them talk themselves into believing that Jesus would reject poor, hungry, downtrodden, oppressed refugees. That was awesome. These guys are amazing. So look, understand something. When we talk about religion in general, there are people who will cherry pick the holy books to no end. So you'll have the best people in the world of all the different faiths, and you'll have the worst people in the world of all the different faiths. And you'll have both of them swear that they have the one true version of that faith. The reality is that these holy books are massively contradictory, and therefore they're massively amorphous. So is there a bunch of shitty stuff in the Bible that you can pick and shitty stuff in Christianity where you can say, yeah, that's what Jesus and that's what God believes and that's what, you know, I believe as a Christian? Sure, you could do that. But there are some issues where it's like, well, that one, it was kind of crystal clear. One of those is immigration. So I have some Bible quotes here for you, and I want to share them. So in Leviticus 19, lines 33-34, it says, when a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. You shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself. That seems pretty clear. Now, sojourn, by the way, sojourner, that's kind of that's like an immigrant or refugee, basically, somebody who's joining you in your land. He said, treat him as your own. Treat him as your own. Okay, Matthew 25:35. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. Deuteronomy 27:19. Cursed be anyone who perverts the justice due to the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. Seems pretty clear. Hebrews 13:2. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware. So in other words, you don't know what those fucking people went through. You got to be hospitable. Of course, you got to be a good person. You don't know what they went through. Maybe they had the worst experience of their life. You got to look out for them. Look out for your fellow brother. Leviticus 25:35. If your brother becomes poor and cannot maintain himself with you, you shall support him as though he were a stranger and a sojourner, and he shall live with you. So in other words, it's such a given that you're supposed to treat the stranger and the sojourner kindly that they say, if your brother becomes poor and he can't afford to take care of himself anymore, you got to let your brother in and treat your brother so well that you treat him like he's a stranger or a sojourner. So it was such a given to treat immigrants, refugees, sojourners, strangers kindly that they say, well, I mean, look, your deadbeat brother, I know it's harder to treat him kindly, but you got to treat him like you treat the sojourner or the stranger. You got to treat him well. And I believe that's all I have here, yeah. So pretty clear, man, pretty clear. This also reminds me of the question, who would Jesus deny health care to? Pretty sure if Jesus was around today, he would be the number one advocate for a single-payer system. But no, I'm sure that Brian Fisher and his idiot buddy there will come up with a cute way to rationalize this and justify it and say that Jesus would love to deny spleen surgery to a child if they can't afford it. All right, guys, out of time, baby. All right, we're back tomorrow. You know the deal. Love y'all, and we will see you there. Peace.